Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses of Seizures. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Well, we made it. Another summer. We got past Tales of the Cocktail. I didn't get too sunburned. I mean, I did. I still did. Walking from the L train over to Roberta's, I got sunburned. But I did pretty good. A lot of people that were there with me. I'm very proud of a lot of my friends. It was a very fun time. Tales of the Cocktail. Another one in the books. Good time. Coming back to New York. Still summer, and I mean, you know, after so many cocktails down in New Orleans, it's, you know, it's time to kick back and relax with a frosty beer. And the person I have in the studio is no real stranger to Heritage Radio Network, although this is his first time on the show today. Welcome to the show, Chris Bala.
Hello. How are you, Damon?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, buddy.
Chris, we've been we have gotten to work together for the past few months at our new bar.
Yep.
At Grand Army.
Grand
in
Army
downtown
bar.
Brooklyn.
Yep.
And you are doing the beer program.
That's right.
There, as well as Mile End, which you've been doing.
I've been doing for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And well, I mean, like that's some pretty good practice, man. Getting to like eat some smoked meat sandwiches and crack some beers.
Yeah.
Not bad.
I've been training. I've transitioned from smoked meat to oysters.
Well,
not a bad transition.
It's not bad. It's not bad. Eventually, I think we all do that. You could probably go both ways. You know, like for the rest of your life and be very happy.
If I could just eat those two things, I would love it. But my girlfriend would kill me. But I, you know, just got to treat yourself.
So, another thing that we've been bonding a lot over beer and cider.
Yep.
And also the fact that you're from Texas and I'm from Oklahoma.
That's right.
But we don't let that get between us.
No, not at all. You're our friendly neighbor to the north. A little more subdued. It's sort of like America and Canada, I think.
Hey, don't go there.
All right.
Okay. I'm kidding.
That's a conflict I've recognized at Mile End for a while, too. Yeah.
So, dude, I mean, like, for those who haven't heard you on Jimmy Carbone's show on Beer Sessions.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how you got into this.
All right.
I mean, you're a heavily into the beer world.
Yeah. It was sort of by accident, but I've lived in New York for about 8 years, and I moved here with no intention of working in the service industry. But I've always loved beer from a pretty young age, sneaking my dad's Shiners out of the fridge, you know, all that. But fell into a couple of jobs about 5 or 6 years ago. I was opening staff at Double Windsor in Windsor Terrace. My buddy Greg Curley opened that bar. He was my boss at Cake Shop before that. I worked at the music venue in the Lower East Side, just making coffee. But that was my first kind of entrance into it, and kind of fell in love with the more esoteric aspects of beer. And from that, was at a manager at Beercraft in Park Slope, which sadly just left us. And that was my true kind of training on, you know, the more technical aspects of beer and like dealing with draft lines and all the nitty gritty of it, and just lifting kegs all the time and
working out.
Yep.
It's like the service industry exercise program.
But yeah, I ran the beer tastings there, so I was always fascinated by the educational aspect of the industry. I was an art historian in college, and so I have always had a strong interest in the history of everything, but especially the history of something that could make me money. Mm-hmm. So, but and from there I ended up as GM at Mile End, with the intention of establishing a pretty strong adventurous esoteric beer program, and from there I ended up at Grand Army.
Yeah, man.
Through Noah Burnimoff, who owns Smile End and also Grand Army.
Yeah, man. We're glad to have you there.
Yeah, man.
Dude, did you so you started out making coffees at Cake Shop.
Yeah.
So does any, like, when I first started making coffees, that was also never my intention, but it was something that when I started messing around with espresso drinks and you know, steaming milk and pouring the right shots and doing all this, and like the way you actually have to like make the rosettes and layer the milk in, like there's a whole crazy science to that that to me goes right along with like cocktails.
Absolutely.
And with making beer as well.
Yeah.
Even like the way, like you were talking about how the technicalities of setting up draft lines, I think a lot of people just think that you like plug and play, man. And no, that's not the way it is.
I mean, it's rather simple science, you know, the way draft beer works. It's but it's also very mysterious for those who don't know the, you know, how CO2 operates and how beer functions as a liquid. And my boss at Beercraft, Ben Granger, who's he's the coolest DIY dude I think in this city, put us through very rigorous training on that specifically. Like, this is how beer works. This is what happens when beer comes out of a faucet. And, you know, here's how we can save this beer, you know, from going down the drain and, you know, wasting money and all that. But more than that, just like, this is what this beverage means and this is how it works. And as soon as you understand the science of it, then it opens up a whole new world of understanding different styles of beer and how they work with their carbonation and their, you know, their, how viscous they are, the alcohol contents and all that. So beer is, I mean, it's crazy stuff.
It is crazy stuff. And it's
very old, you know.
It's very old.
It's the oldest thing. So I kind of love that. And I'm, my mission, my personal mission is always just to expand my mind with history.
I mean, like, always, well, it's a fun word to say, but Reinheitsgebot?
Oh, yeah, Reinheitsgebot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should say, if you want to talk about what first turned me on to beer, I studied German in high school, and okay, I went on a trip to Germany when I was 15, and I wasn't a crazy kid in high school. I didn't really drink that much, but our German teacher was definitely, an enabler. And definitely turned the other way as far as his groups that went to Germany. And there was just one moment when we first got there. We're hanging out in a suburb of Bonn, which is right next to Cologne, the native beer being Kolsch. We had a wooden, like a gravity cask. It's a traditional pouring method for Kolsch and other German beers. And yeah, I drank, two or three of those little, dainty Kolsch glasses,
like the 0.2 glass.
Yeah, I got real tipsy, and I was just lying on a back lawn full of like little tiny white flowers that grow in that part of the world, and it was I just thought it was the best thing ever. But I can still remember how that Kolsch tasted. I do not remember what brewery it came from, though. It was definitely something that you can't get here, though. Kolsch is one of those things that just is never right in America because it's never fresh enough.
Yeah, it has to be, like, when you go to the, like, the Kolsch houses, like, they like, basically just, like, run around in circles with trays full of Kolsches that they're pouring, and, like...
They mark your ticket.
Yeah.
It's kind of like oysters or sushi, you know, you have a little ticket.
Like dim sum?
Dim sum, yeah. Like dim sum, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, but that's sort of my stock answer, but I think it's also, it's true. It's a, you know... When you eat something or drink something, there's an emotional, historical trigger, you know, from your childhood or whatever. And that's definitely it for me.
It's also, I mean, like, the occasion and the proximity, like, you know, it's all part of the experience, too. So, like, I mean... I don't like huge oysters, but having them, south of France.
Yeah.
And you're like drinking rosé.
Yeah, man.
And you're like, oh, man.
Yeah, when you're put in that, in the way it should be, and, whether it be eating oysters in the south of France with a glass of rosé, local rosé, or shotgunning a can of Lone Star beer in someone's backyard.
Yeah.
When you're, you know, 19 years old.
And then driving.
And then driving. Yeah. No, I mean, that's like a...
It's really...
They're exactly the same. Or drinking Kolsch in a backyard.
It's a storyboard, man.
Yeah. That's my... I mean, that's the beauty of life and consumption. And that's why I'm in this industry.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm right now, we're having a couple of Pacificos with lime.
Absolutely.
And it's really freaking hot outside.
It sure
is. Perfect. But yeah, I mean, like, what are, like, so that being said, like, what are some of your favorite, like, beer, food, occasion, pairings, situational?
Right now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess just talking about our bar that we work at, I mean, there's, you know, we have a lot of oysters there. It's an oyster bar in addition to being a neighborhood bar and all that. But, in recent memory, I ate, you know, a dozen Fendillo Bay oysters from Nova Scotia and drank a can of Miller Lite. And nothing could have been more perfect.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But aside from that, I don't know. I'm really into sour stuff. It's sort of a trend, but I've been into it for a while, and there's a lot of great things coming out these days. But I would say seafood and sour beer is great. Yeah. You know,
weren't you saying that, like, some of these breweries are, like, having a... kind of a hard time keeping up with, like, sour beers have, like, blown up.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Crazy.
Well, I mean, so the Westbrook Gosa, which is, Gosa's an old, obscure German style of beer from the northwest of Germany, from Leipzig. It's just a soft, tart, saline wheat ale. It's brewed with salt and coriander. And Westbrook is a brewery in South Carolina that was, you know, the first to put a sour beer in a can. Essentially, and that came to market maybe 3-4 years ago, and they do not have the capacity to, you know, distribute it like Budweiser, that whatever, you know, that being what everybody wants. But yeah, you know, we're here at Roberta's, and currently Westbrook Gosa has a limit on accounts buying it. You know, you can only order you can only order 3 cases at a time, and so Roberta's will sell that in one day, easy. So
yeah.
It's sort of like that's. The trend, you know, there's not enough supply to keep up with the demand right now.
What do you think happened? Like, because it seemed like it happened, like, all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be, like, you could find Rodenbach Grand Cru at a bar every once in a while. And now it's, like, it's always interesting to me with these things, like, just the way that palates change over the years and, like, drink trends, food trends, you know, like, like, well, I mean, it's the same thing that happened with rye whiskey, you know, like almost 10 years ago. And now, you know, now people are starting to catch up. There are so many more distilleries who are making rye whiskey. But for a long time, like, getting Rittenhouse rye is kind of like what's going on with Westbrook Gosa, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, same thing. You know, you're limited on what you could order, and you're very limited on what you could actually get.
Yeah.
You're lucky if you put it in an order and it showed up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would predict that in 5 years, sour beers will be easily obtainable across the board. And
we live in a bubble in New York City.
Absolutely.
You know,
like, I mean, I think there is a large portion of America that does not understand, does not enjoy sour beer. They don't even know it existed. But that's starting to change. I mean, craft breweries are on a huge upswing right now. The craft to, you know, macro percentage is starting, the scales are tipping, and the next 10 years are going to be very interesting. And especially the way, I mean, my mission at Mile End was really like, how do I work with beer in a food program and in fine dining? And it's something I'm still doing at Grand Army, mm-hmm. Especially with the pedigree of food there with our chef, John Bignelli. But it's, things are changing, you know. We are in our bubble, but we're also the people that set the pace for the rest of the world in a way. And it's an exciting time, you know.
Yeah, it absolutely is, man. You know what? Let's take a quick break. And when we get back... especially, I want to talk about beer cocktails, especially from where we're both from.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really, there's a really interesting progression coming from that part of the world.
Sure. Yeah.
And to this point.
Let's
do it. Yeah, cool. We'll be back in just a little bit speaking with Chris Paula of Grand Army Bar in Brooklyn.
Hello out there, it's Steve Jenkins, I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. I'm David Volte, and in the studio today, I've got my buddy Chris Ballett. We've been talking about beer, and at the beginning of the show, you know, I said, you know, you're from Texas and I'm from Oklahoma. I remember something, there were some really weird things happening in the late 90s. You know, nowadays we can get, like, all these crazy, like, really, really creative beer cocktails and cider cocktails, and you know, of course, where we're from, chiladas and micheladas,
yeah,
are like, you know, that's like a big deal. But I remember one in the late 90s. Oh, my God. It was called Tequiza. Yeah. I don't know if anyone remembers that. It was so bad. It was like basically it was like a cerveza that was flavored with like lime and agave.
It was, I don't know if it was, did like Corona Modelo made it or Budweiser made it.
It must be.
It was the proto Bud Light Lime. I think. I mean, they've got a new product like that now too.
Yeah, there's like strawberryta.
Strawberryta.
I'm not gonna lie. You know, strawberry and lime and beer go really well together.
Yeah.
So, and you know, maybe there's tequila in there too.
Sure.
But yeah, it's
make a real cocktail.
It's
not put it in a bottle.
Yeah.
Or you can bottle it yourself.
Maybe. There's been, yeah, and there's been so many, like it's a big category now in like the sales of like the beverage world of like ready to drink cocktails. So it's kind of a no brainer for, you know, big brewing companies to get into that. But what, you know, it's really cool to see what's going on, like, not only, like, cocktail bars, but a lot of beer bars doing even, like, really simple beer cocktails, like, you know, Radlers and
sure.
stuff like that.
I mean, it's smart. Awesome. You got all these great beers around. Why not play with them a bit, you know? I think that whole egg has not been cracked yet, though.
No, I mean, especially like we were talking about before the break, you know, all these, like, different sour beers, they're so, so, like, just, like, on point for like using in cocktails, and you brought one from Texas.
Yeah,
we tried recently, the Tepache.
Oh gosh, yeah. So Argus Cidery in Austin, Texas makes this delicious pineapple wine. It's basically a cider made from pineapples, and it's a tribute to a different type of beverage from Mexico that's a lightly fermented pineapple juice. But this is a dry pineapple wine that's so redolent of pineapple, and I know that Shelton Brothers out of Massachusetts is trying to bring that up here. I'm waiting for the day it's available in New York because, you know, as I've been bugging you about, I think it would be the most amazing thing in cocktails.
Oh, man. I would like to just make it. But
yeah, I mean, I would get Travis Kaufman to do that.
Yeah, totally. Get Folk Spear to maybe do it.
But yeah,
I would rather. I've got too many things on my plate.
Right,
to start making.
We don't have time for projects. Yeah,
but I also want to support, the people who are making it now because it's so good and they're nailing it.
If Argus, if you're listening, come to New York. Please.
Please bring it to New York.
Yeah. But
I've already got a whole menu written with that pineapple.
But beer cocktails. Yeah. I mean it's kind of blowing my mind, and I tried to do research before the show so I had some sort of historical background. But just as far as what I know about beer, you know, it's like there are many flavors you cannot derive from anything else that if put into a cocktail, beer can provide. So, I mean, either bitterness, tropical, citrus notes from a hoppy beer, IPA or pale ale, or, you know, roast, coffee, chocolate and all that from a stout.
Big-ass maltiness from Belgian.
Big, chewy, malty Belgian beers. Or, you know, tart, saline, barnyard, whatever from the world of Saison, farmhouse ales, and sour beers. So, I mean, basically, I'm very fascinated by. I haven't seen anybody play around with sour beer that much in beer cocktails. But also, you know, because it's not very available, hard to, you know, institute a bar program with something that's not available. So it's like...
Well, it's a really cool thing, too, because, like, to me, well, there's a lot of... Like, I've worked on cocktail programs before for places that only have, they don't have a full liquor license, they have like a beer and wine license,
right.
And there's so much, it's kind of intimidating because you're like, oh man, what the hell am I going to do with this? But there's so much you can do, and bars and bartenders are approving it like all over the world now. It's like, it's really crazy.
Yeah.
And another thing that's really cool about beer cocktails to me is that, you know, obviously they're a little bit more sessionable when it comes down to it.
Yep.
And you can,
no, they're great.
You can hang out longer.
Yeah, it's like amazing ingredient for a long drink. You know, I mean, why use club soda when you could have beer in there?
That's I have a cocktail called the Americano Perfecto.
Yeah.
And instead of being, you know, sweet vermouth Campari and seltzer, it's sweet vermouth Campari and Pilsner.
Yeah.
And
why not?
Why wouldn't you just put, why wouldn't you Americanize
why not?
That,
I mean, I know you like to make drinks as strong as humanly possible, so you should always use an alcoholic beverage over carbonated water. But things are changing, you know.
Yeah.
Our friend Maddie Clark is opening a bar that's going to focus on beer cocktails in Bed-Stuy. I'm like, still have not picked his brain, but he knows much more than I do about that. I'll say that. And there's a history with beer cocktails. I mean, I think mostly out of lack of supply. I don't know, just people needed to get drunk, you know, in the 18th century.
Yeah.
And got inventive with it. But
yeah, there's things like, you know, certain things like flips and like an ale sangria is actually one of my favorite drinks. It's kind of a weird drink. It's any kind of like ale and a little bit of sugar.
Yeah.
And just nutmeg on top. It's right. So good.
Yeah.
So good.
I mean those ales, those traditional ales, which you can't really get that flavor anymore, but the way beer was made in Britain in say the late 17th, early 18th century, the type of beer that would go in a flip. So a flip being it would be like a dark ale, what people normally drank, something a relative of the modern porter, rum, some gnarly ass rum.
Some really funky
and sugar and an egg.
Yeah.
And served hot for sailors. but those ales, you know, the way beer was made then, malt was, it was before kilns. So beers were smoky. Beers were tremendously malty. Fermentation hadn't really been figured out, so potentially sour. Imagine those things with rum, man. Like, yeah. It's really hard to find a beer like that today. There's a style called a Kentucky Common that was a kind of a primordial beer of America, dating back to colonial times. But it was basically a spontaneously fermented dark beer, relative of an English mild. But it was tart, funky, dark, malty. And, like, some people are making them these days. Not a very popular style, but I it would be so delicious with rum, I think.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Here we go.
We're going to have to try one after this. We're going to have to get some in.
Yeah.
Call in a favor.
Yeah.
Bring in a case.
Yeah.
yeah. I mean, that's... I've had another cocktail that was kind of like, in a way, similar. It was like port and Benedictine and some very aromatic bitters and stout.
Yeah.
And like, I think a lot of times, like, people, like, a lot of times, like, the cocktails I see with beer at a lot of bars, it's typically something that's, like, on the lighter to medium side.
Right. It's always, I mean, a relative of a Shandy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the Chevelle cocktail or, or a Michelada. And, I mean, I like those things.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know,
there's just so much out there.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's the promise of, you know, hoppy beer is so incredible today, you know, and like locally too. And the flavors people are getting out of these new strains of hops are outrageous.
Yeah.
You know, just like guava, passion fruit, like so much more than just like pine resin and grapefruit, which is like the classic West Coast model of IPA. You know, the things that are coming out today are... Like the thought of making cocktails out of them is tremendous.
Yeah, and you've got all these breweries that are starting to make beer schnapps. I mean,
what's
your opinion on that?
You know, it's fun. It's very expensive. So basically, the beer schnapp idea is a beer distillate. So you're distilling a beer that's already made. You know, so when you make like a whiskey, you have this mash. That's something nobody would want to drink, but it's you know, similar to beer. You know. But, yeah, beer distillate, you could take any beer. It's distilled in preferably the most gentle way possible, so you're not disrupting the aromatics of it. Hmm. Bee United, who import, like, Schneider and Schlenkerla and these sort of, you know, sort of idiosyncratic but also super classic European beers, they have had a program of distilling them. And they're really tasty. I mean, you get the essence of the beer, but it's, you know, it's a 40 proof or 80 proof liquor.
Eau de vie, yeah.
Eau de vie, yeah. And, yeah, it's cool. They're prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to use it in a cocktail.
Yeah, but it's cool.
And
I'm like, I'm
so
into
delicate.
It. There's a local dude, I unfortunately don't know his name, but he distilled some beers from Other Half.
Oh, cool.
Down from our neck of the woods. And... they were so delicious. Like, he distilled an Imperial Stout and an Imperial IPA, and it's sipping on them, you just tasted it. Was like the spirit, figuratively and metaphorically, of the beer. So yeah, I don't know. Fascinating. But yeah, I wish they were cheaper so you could put them in cocktails,
seriously. Or just actually be able to drink them.
Or just drink them. I mean, like, we can drink them, sure, on our own time. Yeah, but yeah, the pricey bottles for sure.
Well, my latest one has been drinking Allagash White with pineapple juice.
Oh, that's great.
So good.
Isn't that great?
So good.
Yeah. I'm always turned off by people asking for citrus with a wheat beer. That's like just a beer nerd thing.
It's well,
like,
yeah.
Don't destroy the beer, man. Like, but pineapple, there's a... I think you might know the woman who comes in for a happy hour at the bar, but she always orders Allagash White with a pineapple garnish.
Yeah.
And I think she just sips it and then just takes a bite of the pineapple. And
she's got it all figured out, man.
It's so cool. I'm like, I really want to talk to her about it because I think it's so cool.
It's so great. I mean, pineapple's awesome with anything.
Yeah, no, I know.
But especially with that beer. But yeah, I have no shame in putting that. But, you know, like, well, going back to, you know, the wheat beer with fruit in it, like a lemon or an orange. Well, Blue Moon started the whole orange
thing. Yeah, they did. Yeah. I mean, it's... I think just, like, the quality of beer in, like, the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, like, nobody cleaned draft lines right, and it's like, you got, like, a... you know, like, a Hoegaarden. Like, a crappy, not fresh Hoegaarden. It's like, yeah, of course, you're gonna have some orange or lemon in that.
Yeah.
But, you know, beer should always be consumed fresh and out of clean draft lines. And I think people are starting to understand that. And it's like, if you put a lemon in a beer, it messes everything up.
Yeah,
it
throws off the whole balance.
Yeah.
And plus, like, if you're drinking, like, the oldest brewery in the world, Weinstephaner.
Yeah. Don't mess that up.
Yeah, they've been around since 1040.
Yeah.
And they were around before citrus made its way into Germany. So
exactly.
They wouldn't have done that anyway.
Exactly.
But, you know, we're always going to keep advancing and putting things in other things. And that's just the way it is.
That's the beauty of cocktails.
It is beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. And it's been a beautiful thing having you on the show today, Chris.
Yeah, thank you.
Look forward to drinking some more Allagash with pineapple juice and maybe shotgunning a Lone Star after this.
Yeah, if they've got them. We'll shotgun something.
We'll find something.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Dave.
Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check in to Heritage Radio Network for many, 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 many more programs just like this one. Cheers, Chris.
Cheers, buddy. So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that's him. It's gonna get you some. Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.